The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Larson, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date is April 25, 2023. This panel of the court today has only two cases set for oral argument. We had a third case, which then was postponed. The first case for oral argument today is number A22-1596, in the matter of the welfare of the children of TEW and JJS. Counsel, we are hearing the oral arguments by Zoom, but the rules are essentially the same as when we're in the courtroom. Each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant will have an opportunity for a rebuttal of 5 minutes. There is a time clock, as you can see on one of the screens. If you're using the gallery view or some other similar view with that tile should be visible to you, so you should be able to see the time remaining while you're arguing. With that, counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I am Jennifer L. Thompson on behalf of Appellant TEW.
You may proceed.
Thank you. As of today, Appellant is 13 months, 2.5 weeks sober. At the time of trial, she was already 6 months sober. She's in the same housing she was at that time, has a full-time job, safe and secure housing, full-time job. She easily rebuttable presumption by her conditions at the time of trial. So the district court erred when it found that appellant had not rebutted the presumption. The rebuttal requires only that the parent be able to be entrusted with the care of the children. And in her position at that time, she was very much safe and sober and able to care for the children. TEW has had 12 years since her first involuntary termination of her parental rights, and every involuntary termination since that time has been based on the prior involuntary termination. In this case, she had no services provided to her. I believe in any of her prior cases, she's had no services provided to her. She entered treatment on her own. She found employment on her own. She sought mental health care on her own. And so she had not only rebutted the presumption, but at the time of trial was no longer presumptively or in any other way unfit to parent the child. So the finding that she had not rebutted the presumption and the finding that the agency had proven by clear and convincing evidence that she was palpably unfit were both incorrect findings and abuse of discretion.
Ms. Thompson,
yes.
In reviewing your appellant's brief, it seems like I think the entirety of your argument, I think, is focused on the issue of whether the presumption has been rebutted. And you conclude that argument by saying, because it has been rebutted in your view, then the district court must find by clear and convincing evidence that she is palpably unfit. And the district court made an alternative finding. It made that finding in the alternative, correct?
It did find her palpably unfit, correct.
And so, but are you challenging that finding also? Are you arguing that that finding was error?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. She rebutted the presumption, and then the agency did not go on to prove by clear and convincing evidence that she was palpably unfit. That finding was an error. And
so,
I do believe.
So I don't see that argument in your brief. Perhaps you could tell us orally the grounds for that argument so that we're fully informed of your views as to why the alternative finding was error.
Certainly. I do believe it is. It's stated in the issues in my brief.
Correct. And I'm referring to the argument section of your brief.
Sure. But. Okay. Yes, I believe it is that finding was in error because, again, not the facts that rebutted the presumption, not only rebutted the presumption, but also proved her fitness. There was not an active use or addiction at the time. She had safe and stable housing. And for the
but
reason
she only had At that point, 7 months of sobriety, is that right?
That's correct. At that time, she had 7 months of sobriety. However, that is a significant period of time.
But based upon her history, that 7 months was less than the longest time she had been sober on a prior occasion.
I believe 8 months had been her longest, but the standard is the reasonably foreseeable future, and I don't believe 1 month is that's such a small period of time to deprive a parent of the fundamental right of parenthood over a month. The agency certainly could have brought its petition and opened its chips.
At the time of trial, had she completed her outpatient treatment program?
I believe she had. I would have to go back and specify, you know, look for that specific information, but I believe she had. I know she was actively in ongoing mental health treatment, and it continues in mental health treatment. She continues in sobriety support groups at this time, but I believe she had completed treatment.
And her history was over a period of many years. She'd have 25 different chemical dependency programs that ultimately each one of those resulted in a relapse. Is that correct?
She did have a long-term chemical use problem. That is very true, Your Honor. I think it's important to point out that in none of her prior CHIPS cases was she offered any services. The agency was relieved of reasonable efforts. And so everything she did on her own. If any of those agencies had participated and maybe given her some services, she may have done much better in
her
sobriety.
But she was in 25 different chemical dependency treatment programs.
But the agency didn't.
Somebody must have been involved with her.
I believe she sought help herself, but the agency didn't bring that as a ground for termination, Your Honor. It is, I forget which clause it is, but having failed four prior inpatient treatments is a presumption for palpable unfitness, but the agency didn't bring that as a ground. They only brought the prior involuntary termination as a grounds for termination.
Well, but the facts that she had had a long history of chemical dependency were permissibly in before the trial court.
This is true. However, at the time of trial, she was sober, she was safe, and it cannot reasonably.
What was her housing status at the time of trial?
She was in safe and stable housing. She's still in the same home that she was at the time of trial.
What does safe and stable housing mean?
It's sober. There's no criminal activity in the home. It's a long-term, it's not a hotel or a temporary housing situation. She was had a lease and had plenty of room to take the child home.
The housing that she was in at the time of trial, is that housing suitable for children? And if not, was there evidence about her, about the availability of other housing if she were to, if the child were returned to her?
To my understanding, yes, the housing was suitable for children, and the child was an infant, so there's, you know, doesn't necessarily take up that much room. And she's still in the same housing. She's still in the same employment. And I don't believe she needed any alternatives. She had room for the child. She had facilities for the child. She had everything that was needed.
Maybe to make my question more specific, did she testify that if that she would get the child back, she would move somewhere else someday? Or did she testify about any other housing options that were available to her but beside her present option?
Your Honor, I apologize. I don't recall her specific testimony regarding the housing.
Okay, thank you.
I will say again that at the time of trial, which is how a parent is to be judged as far as their palpable unfitness, she was in voluntary programming, participating in ongoing groups and therapy, and her past actions, behaviors, conditions, etc., was the entire basis for the agency's case. At that time, she not only rebutted the presumption, but she was in a position where she could care for the child. She had a home for the child, and at the bare minimum, had the district court dismissed the petition for termination and opened a child protection matter, they could have vetted her situation. However, based on prior involuntary terminations, chose to make a black and white decision that she was palpably unfit without giving due weight to the evidence.
Guardian ad litem testified, did she not?
She did.
And the guardian ad litem expressed some concern about the housing arrangement.
The guardian ad litem had been the guardian on a prior involuntary termination. She, to my understanding, did not interact with TEW, did not inspect the housing as it presently was, and based her opinion on the prior involuntary termination.
Had she been in that same housing on the prior occasion?
To my understanding, no, this was a different home.
I thought there's some reference in the record about sober housing. Was this her present housing, or housing at the time of trial was a sober house?
There had been sober living in her history, but the housing that she's in now was independent housing and was at the time of trial, to my understanding.
And up to the time of trial, the mother and child had not been together at all. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor, because the agency removed the child and did not provide for any sort of contact or efforts at reunification. There was also a finding made by the district court that the agency was not relieved of reasonable efforts to reunify. I believe the language was that it was temporarily suspended. Reasonable efforts were temporarily suspended, so there was not a proper finding made to suspend those efforts. The agency could have still offered voluntary efforts, and it's clear that TEW was participating in services, but the agency was never properly relieved of reasonable efforts to reunify, even though the statute allows for them to be. The court did not make a proper finding to relieve them of those efforts.
At the time of trial, did your client suggest to the trial court that as an alternative termination, a neglect or some other status could be established and the county would then be able to have continuing a working relationship? Was that something that she offered as an alternative?
I didn't represent the appellant at the district level. I don't know what conversations were had between her counsel at the time and the agency as to requesting a CHIPS be opened instead of and the TPR dismissed. So I can't answer whether that was ever discussed.
My question wasn't the discussion between her and counsel, but between her and the court. She did testify, did she not?
She did testify. And that really is a legal conclusion that I wouldn't expect a parent to offer to the court. So
did she have any proposal other than to continue to live in this, which I understood to be sober housing?
Your Honor, I apologize. I don't recall her specific testimony with regard to housing.
I have a question, Ms. Thompson, about your reference earlier to the suspension of reasonable efforts. Did the court order that reasonable efforts were suspended for a fixed period of time or until some future event, or was it simply a general indefinite suspension?
From my reading, Your Honor, it was a general indefinite suspension, and reasonable efforts or relief of reasonable efforts was not ruled on again or not discussed again at the lower court until the order came out terminating my client's parental rights.
I have a question about a different matter, and that is, I think you argue in your brief that the court did not allow visitation immediately after the protective hearing. But I think what you say in your brief is that after 30 days of sobriety, she could have visitation, but the county would not allow that. Can you tell us more about that? Because I'm not I didn't see I haven't read the prior order, and I'm not familiar with the record on that. Could you please explain that further?
The original condition was that visits would be allowed after 30 days of proven sobriety. TEW remained sober throughout the duration of the case, and the agency did not facilitate any visits at all, despite that proven sobriety. So the original condition laid out at the EPC hearing, to my understanding, was that there could be some supervised visits after 30 days. They never happened. They simply never happened during the duration of the case. There was no contact between the mother and the child at all. So there was no opportunity to observe them together. There was no opportunity to form a bond or attachment. The agency simply just, based on that suspension, did not facilitate reunification in any way.
Did mother affirmatively request visits after 30 days of sobriety?
I believe she did. I'm not privy to her conversations with the social worker who was assigned to the case.
Is there any evidence in the trial record about that?
I don't believe there is in the trial record, and again, those conversations are generally not documented.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Your initial allotment of time has expired, but as I said earlier, you will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and then begin your argument.
That's okay. Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Lee. I'm an assistant Stearns County attorney, and I represent the respondent, Stearns County Human Services. There are three issues here before the court. The first, whether the district court erred when it determined that the appellant did not meet the burden of production required to rebut the presumption that she's palpably unfit to parent. The second is whether the district court erred when it found that even if the appellant had rebutted the presumption, that the respondent proved by clear and convincing evidence that a basis existed to terminate appellant's parental rights. And the third is whether the district court erred in finding that termination was in the child's best interests. Respondent requests that the court decide the second issue first. In doing so, it can assume, without deciding, that the mother met her burden of production and rebutted the presumption that she is palpably unfit to parent. Even if the appellant were to succeed on issue one, the court would then still need to look at issue two, which is whether the county proved their burden by clear and convincing evidence. The county filed this termination under 260C.301, subdivision one, paren B, paren four. And that states which that a parent is palpably unfit to be a party to the parent and child relationship because of a consistent pattern of specific conduct before the child or of a specific conditions directly relating to the parent and child relationship, either of which are determined by the court to be of a duration or nature that renders the parent unable for the reasonably foreseeable future to care appropriately for the ongoing physical, mental, or emotional needs of the child. This provision is unique in that it requires the court to make a determination of the projected permanency of the parent's condition. The court in re the Welfare of the Child of JW stated that the presumption of palpable unfitness is retrospective in nature. And I would argue that this entire statute needs to be retrospective in nature because how does the court project permanency without looking at prior patterns? The prior patterns, I believe, in this case are clear. The mother had eight prior terminations to prior children and documented cycles of drug abuse and relapse for the prior decade. There was testimony that the appellant had attended over 25 different treatment programs and didn't achieve any prolonged sobriety after any of them. The appellant testified that her long
Was she in a treatment program at the time of trial?
She was, Your Honor, at the time of trial, she had successfully completed inpatient treatment that was undisputed. However, she was still engaging in an intensive outpatient treatment program where she was attending treatment, I believe, from like 8:30 a.m. till noon every single day, every weekday. So 5 days a week. So she was still in pretty intensive treatment during the time of trial. Because of this, the court had found that she had not significantly altered her status at the time of trial, and that her situation had not changed from the prior decade. The appellant had done this cycle where there is external factors encouraging her sobriety, such as child protection involvement or treatment program, that she was able to maintain her sobriety. But what she did not establish was that unstructured sobriety. And that's where she would have been in the community, holding down a job, holding down her mental health treatment without the
aid. Well, mother didn't need to prove that. That was the county's burden, correct?
Correct.
And so part of this is that it's the county and not mother who bears the burden of showing that despite the steps that she has taken in her sobriety, that she continues to meet the standard in subdivision 1B4. And it's not that mother is required to come in and present evidence that she's going to be able to show into the future that she's going to have the requisite fitness, correct?
That's correct. And I do believe that the agency met that burden by showing that through her past patterns, she had not significantly altered her circumstance, and that she did not take the steps necessary in order to show that she could parent in the future.
So when you're presented with a parent who has, you know, documented that they suffer from chemical dependency, what would we look to a parent actually presenting enough or doing enough that this would convert to a CHIPS case rather than to an automatic TPR? Because when I look at these cases, they happen so quickly in terms of time that it's unclear to me what additional steps she could have taken to show long-term sobriety given the distance between the child's birth and when this trial occurred.
Correct. And I think that this situation is unique and that she does have that long history. She had a prior termination in, I think it was June of 2021. She knew she was pregnant. She testified to at the time of that trial. She took no steps to achieve sobriety during the time from that prior termination to the child's birth. And in fact, even after the child's birth, she took no action until March. The child was born at the end of December. It took her 3 months to get into treatment. So I understand that the timelines are short, but that's in light of trying to advocate for the child's best interest and trying to expedite the permanency for the child.
But I think Go ahead. Oh, I was just gonna say, I think based on your argument, it wouldn't really have mattered if she had entered treatment in January or if she entered it in March, because as long as she was still receiving services of some kind or some kind of intensive treatment, then then under your reasoning, the county would be able to show that she continued to be palpably unfit.
Yeah, and again, I think that these are very fact intensive and situational based. And at the time of trial, we had a parent who had been sober only for 7 months. It was no longer than she had been sober in the past. And so I think any steps that she had taken, either outside of the child protection system or even right away after the birth of the child, would have aided her in showing the court that this was a different situation. However,
what was her housing status at the time of trial?
Your Honor, she was living in a sober housing facility.
What does that mean?
So how she explained it is that it was a house with several bedrooms where there is a peer recovery specialist that sort of manages the home and provides 24-hour support. All of the other residents of that home were engaged in the same treatment facility that she was in. They were in different, I guess, stages of their treatment. Some had just begun. Some were further along in the process. And so that was essentially the living situation that she was in.
Was that housing equipped to handle children?
I believe that children could be present. Yes.
Did she have any plans for the future beyond the sober housing?
She did testify that she had a recent offer to potentially become a peer recovery specialist. There was some discussion as to what that would require. She hadn't taken any of the required steps to get certified or any of that. It was a very new development, and so there wasn't a lot of testimony on the feasibility of that. But her long-term plan essentially was to remain in that sober living environment.
And what is your position, the county's position, about whether that is appropriate for a young child?
I think the county's position, as well as the position of the guardian ad litem, were clear in that they didn't believe that was safe, sober housing, given the fact that there was people in that home that were at different stages of their recovery, coming in and out. Some were more serious, some were less serious. It created a risk for the appellant, first of all, for relapse. And also it exposed the child potentially to people that were actively using. I know that the guardian had testified that there was somebody there during a visit of the social worker that looked like they were actively under the influence, and that was not addressed while the social worker was present. And so it was concerning to the guardian and the social worker that this housing was not safe and sober and stable. I do think that the court also found that fact to be true and determined that's why it was in the best interest of the child not to be reunified with the mother, but for termination due to the fact that the mother could not provide ongoing, safe, stable, and secure housing. The court...
In the 25 years that she's been involved with one agency or another, what's the longest time that she has been able to parent a child? Does the record reflect that?
I don't recall an exact time period that she was able to parent a child. I do know that with her first two children, she did parent them actively prior to them being taken away. I do believe that once they were taken away, that I don't know that she had another ability or opportunity to parent any subsequent children.
I thought the record reflected the caseworker's testimony that she had not been attending parenting classes, had not been attending trauma therapy or domestic violence programming or grief support, a concern about her prior loss. Am I correct in that recollection from the record?
You are correct. There was testimony on several different areas that the social worker believed that the mother had not addressed her mental health. The mother was adamant that she had dealt with her ambiguous loss, that she was in a better place. However, there was no corroborating evidence as to her progress in therapy.
Was there some testimony that she's still having some difficulty about her prior loss involving a custodian of one of her children?
There was testimony that she had been contacting the prior or the current custodian of her prior child to the point that it was harassing, and that they were looking at some legal action to deal with that. There was testimony from her that she did not follow the recommendations of her diagnostic assessment in getting a psychological evaluation, that her previous diagnoses had simply gone away because they weren't included in the diagnostic assessment. There was lack of concern of any relapse. She stated that she had no concern of relapse, which was a gross lack of awareness. And so there was a lot of issues that were still sort of outstanding, that even if we take her testimony at face value, there was a significant number of things that were still needing to be done. including the parenting classes. She testified that she didn't take any parenting classes, didn't do any assessments, and that she was waiting for the resolution of this case to see if those were necessary. It just showed a lack of ability to get the things done that she needed to get done.
Could you please respond to the suggestion that the county improperly limited her opportunity for visitation after 30 days of sobriety?
Yes, I can. The emergency protective care hearing that was held, I understand that in the findings and order, the term that the judge used was that the agency's efforts were suspended. However, in the emergency protective care order, it's very clear that the agency was relieved of those efforts, that it was based on the prior terminations, yes, but it was also based on futility. And so I do believe that that issue was properly brought before the court, that there was a motion to be relieved of efforts and that the agency was relieved. I do believe that there was some indication at that hearing that visitation could be revisited. However, if it was, the court never ordered that those take place. And so at the time of trial, there was no order that visitation needed to be occurring.
And did that EPC order put the burden on one party or the other to request that the court revisit the issue of visitation?
I do not recall. I think it was, I believe the situation was that the judges were switching over. We had a change in our juvenile judge. And so there was a new judge that was getting the case. And so I believe it was just left open that it could be revisited once the new judge came on. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Ms. Thompson, as I said earlier, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. The agency argues that, according to JW, that the statute is retrospective in nature. However, in MMB, the court found that the district court should not give undue weight to old evidence of neglect. I believe that's exactly what happened in this case, because there was nothing current, nothing contemporary that showed any evidence of neglect or abuse. The agency alleges that a person may have been actively using in TEW's sober housing. However, the very nature of sober housing is that a person is eliminated from the program, kicked out of the program if there's any evidence of use. So of all situations in the community outside of inpatient treatment, sober housing is one of the most safe and stable places for a person in recovery to live. It's simply not feasible that there are people actively daily using in the environment around the parent or the child. Excuse me. In SZ, the court also found that the trial court should rely not primarily on past history, but to a great extent upon the projected permanency of the parent's inability to care for his or her child. Here again, TEW showed that she, after her 7 months, 1 month short of her longest period of sobriety in the past, that she was on the right track. And while she may have had an extensive history, there was sufficient evidence to show that she was projecting to be sober and gainfully employed and caring for her mental health well into the future. And her condition today obviously shows that.
What was her status of employment at the time of trial?
My understanding, she was employed part-time at the time. She was in intensive outpatient treatment, but she was employed, so she had an income at the time. Regarding the visits that were eliminated in BMJMCG, the court found that The court must ensure a parent is afforded a meaningful opportunity to demonstrate they're capable or not capable of parenting overnight with or without supervision. The agency in this case simply neglected to provide that opportunity. They had no means of knowing whether or not they just simply decided that TEW was not fit. They had no means of knowing otherwise, except based on her history, again, which was old evidence of neglect. Further, I believe counsel just stated that the suspension of reasonable efforts was left up to the new judge to address, and that made it a post-trial determination that efforts at reunification was futile. In ADB, the court found that it's an abuse of discretion to find reasonable efforts futile as a post-trial determination. I don't believe that the suspension was ever addressed fully. The agency took it upon itself to relieve itself of efforts. And again, there was no proper finding that reasonable efforts were futile. The counsel mentioned that it took TEW 3 months to get into treatment. That is not an unreasonable amount of time to get into treatment. Anyone who works daily in the mental health and chemical dependency community in the state recognizes that there's a waiting list for beds. There's a waiting list for Rule 25 determinations, recommendations, et cetera. To get into treatment on your own without the help of the agency in 3 months is actually quite a feat. So I would ask that be heard with, taken with a grain of salt, that it took 3 months. Again, my client rebutted the presumption, and the agency did not have current information to show that she was palpably unfit to parent. The court abused its discretion and made an error in finding, without clear and convincing evidence, that she is unable to parent this child. There was not enough grave, weighty, due reasons to terminate her rights to this child, simply because she had been involuntarily terminated several times based on the primary termination without any services through any of those cases. To go back 12 years and terminate her rights again without making findings appropriate to her current state was an error. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is now submitted. The court will issue its opinion in writing within 45 days.